You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Josh Bruce.
I'm Annette Mayer.
I'm Shauna Game, and you're listening to the Earn and Invest
Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Current Events Thursday. This is a new type of episode here on Earn and Invest on the last Thursday of every month where we discuss breaking or maybe even broken financial news with both an expert as well as community members. Community members have volunteered to add the perspective of the common man or woman behind the podcast player, but of course we know that Earn and Invest listeners are anything but common. Today, we are joined by expert Shauna Game, who is a certified financial planner on a mission to change how millennials and really everyone thinks, acts, and feels about their finances. She is host of the universally popular and top-ranked podcast, Everyone's Talking Money. From our community, we have Josh Bruce and Annette Mayer. Shauna, Josh, Annette, welcome to Earn and Invest. Today, we're discussing an article from Yahoo Finance titled, Here's What to Do with Your Retirement Savings When Markets Are Shaky by Carrie Hannon. Carrie writes, U.S. consumer prices came in hotter than expected in March, according to the latest data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The consumer price index rose 0.4% over the previous month and 3.5% annually, an acceleration from February's 3.2% annual gain in prices. That news shook many investors who jumped on the let's sell stocks train. Underlying that rush to unload shares was the looming concern that inflation might be back on the run and the Federal Reserve may not cut U.S. interest rates as much or at all this year. It may have been just a blip, but if inflation doesn't cool, pushing the Federal Reserve to delay interest rate cuts for longer, the market may clam up again. Then what? Carrie goes on to say, I talked to several experts about whether it's best to stay the course or consider making some adjustments to retirement targeted holdings. Here's what to do with your retirement savings when the markets are shaky. We are going to get to that in a moment. What do we do when the markets change? But first and foremost, let's talk a little bit about where our retirement savings are now, because I think we have to kind of discuss asset allocation and are we in equities and bonds or real estate? So first and foremost, Shauna, where are you putting your retirement savings? Where is most of that located?
I am primarily personally in equities, in stocks, a little bit higher risk than maybe most people might take on. But as a money expert, I kind of like to balance things that way. So I'm about a 90-10 split between equities and bonds and cash and that sort of stuff. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see. I think I say this every single year at the beginning of the year when we're talking about investing. It's going to be interesting to see what kind of year this is going to unfold like. You know, it's harder to predict what's going to be happening to our investments, but that's why I think we're all here. And that's what I think makes it both fun and confusing to talk about.
Josh, talk about your asset allocation. Are you mostly equities and bonds, or do you have money elsewhere in a business or real estate?
Sure. So this is actually tough for me because I don't separate retirement from just living. So my portfolio as a whole is about 94% equities right now and about 6% in cash. And I do have a business and things like that. But yeah, that's how mine rolls right now. So I think, what do we classify that as? The barbell strategy, at least for now. So yeah.
And that we all sound similar because I actually fall right on the side that I think Josh and Sean are talking about. I am almost all stocks and bonds, and I'm heavily equities with about 90 to 91, 92%, depending on what's happening in the market, and then about 8% cash and bonds. Is that where you fall? And do you, like Josh, do you separate retirement savings from normal savings, or do you kind of lump it all together?
Yeah, I'm a copycat in this situation too. I actually have 100% in equities, but I am 40 and I feel like I have time on my side, so I'm going to let this run. And in theory, people say I'm being risky, but I don't think I'm being risky. I am trying to fight this inflation everyone talks about.
We are definitely going to get into that. Shauna, we all seem to have most of our money in paper assets, right? We're talking about equities or bonds. And so what Carrie Hannon is talking about here is kind of important to us. First and foremost, she presupposes that we're headed for some shaky ground here. How do we even define shaky ground when it comes to the stock market? I've always wondered, how do we know when we're on the precipice?
Oh, Jordan, that is a crystal ball question.
That's why you're the expert, Sean.
Wow. You know, yeah, I mean, I need a crystal ball. I think anybody needs a crystal ball for that. I think it just, you know, everything is prone to some shakes and bumps. We're also in an election year. And typically in most election years, we see the stock market have all sorts of shifts and turns. And then we've got inflation on top of that. You know, obviously you talked about the feds. Are we going to cut rates, not cut rates? And so I think there's just a lot of balls up in the air. And, it's hard for people to know exactly what to do with their money, which I think this is what this article was talking about. And, you know, my takeaway, I think, ultimately from this article was that investing, no matter what year we're in, right? It's a very emotional, there's an emotional component to it, which, you know, is kind of my cup of tea that I like to talk about. And so it's really easy when the stock market is going well, like it has in many previous years, for us to kind of turn a blind eye almost to our investments. They're happening in the background, we're making money, we feel good, but when we read some of these articles or we turn on the news and we hear things about inflation or is the Fed going to cut rates, not cut rates, and we hear some of those big words that they like to use in those clickbaity words they like to use in the articles, we get really emotional. And I think then that's when we look at our portfolios and we might have a panic moment and not know what to do. So I think this year is going to be kind of par for the course of, you know, the last couple of years where we don't quite exactly know where we're headed. And I think that makes it really difficult for just everyday people to figure out exactly what to do.
Well, and I think that's one of the interesting parts is like when it's going really, really well, we always give the caveat. Like that's when you hear the disclaimer over and over again, right? Historical performance does not guarantee future performance. When it's going down, it's like, is it going to keep going down? Yes, it's going to keep going down. We think it's going to keep going down for XYZ reasons. And it's like the messaging is always still the same, right? Like, but we don't emphasize that caveat of like, even when it's going down, that's not a guarantee that it's going to keep going down, right? Like, when's it going to turn around? Could it turn around, et cetera, right?
Josh, you're talking about the emotions involved in investing. And one thing I really like to say, and I tell people this all the time, is when the stock market is going up, check your investments every day. When the stock market is going down, almost never check. And it begs an important question. If we know we're going to get emotional about this, how do you know how often you should actually be following up? Like, are you checking the stock market every day? Are you checking once a month? How often are you looking at your investments?
I actually do check every day because I think there's a difference between checking something and deciding to take action, right? So this gets into the rebalancing thing. If you check and you freak out and decide this is the time to sell, you're technically rebalancing, but you're not necessarily following the rebalancing schedule or rules you've set up in hopefully your investment policy statement, right?
And that Josh just mentioned a bunch of things, including an investor policy statement, which we will touch on before the end of this show. But first and foremost, if we're going to be emotional and we're going to make bad decisions, maybe making bad decisions also has to do with what the current news cycle says. How much attention are you paying to such things as the CPI, Consumer Price Index? Do you care about the Fed rates? How often are you paying attention to what's happening with inflation? Are these things you're digesting on a regular basis, or are you more trying to ignore them?
I mostly try to ignore them because I look at the business side of media, and they are trying to sell us things. They want us to fluctuate. So I stay the course. I have my blinders on, and I do know my plan was set up at the beginning, and I follow that. And I also wonder how much of this talk of the stock market, are they speaking to day traders or people who are picking individual stocks? I have chosen index funds, so I rely on them, the whoever's managing the index funds, to rebalance it for me. So I don't need to check my portfolio often. And I check it once a year.
Annette, Josh mentioned the investor policy statement. I have openly admitted that I am a horrible finance expert because I don't have one. I know what I like to do with my money. I have it pretty much scorched in my brain, but I've not put it down on paper. Do you have a policy statement?
Not on paper, but I do have one in my head. But I know myself, and I know I'm able to stick with it in my head. And my husband is part of that. We know we're good at looking at it from an outside perspective. But if I did need it on paper, I would have it on paper.
Shauna, it's an important point, because if we really dig down into what Carrie Hannon says in this article, what she's really saying is it time to rethink our asset allocation, right? That's the more professional way of saying this. So how do we know when it's time? We know that we'd love to set it and forget it, but we also don't want to be blind to what's happening in the world. So what are some of the indications that maybe it really is time to relook at our asset allocation?
Well, I would say, you know, the first place to start, which most people don't take the step, is to do some sort of risk tolerance quiz. To, you know, there are a million of them online, to figure out exactly how risky you want to be before you set your asset allocation model. You know, I think most people will read the articles and, you know, they mention in this article, well, take, you know, 110 minus your age, and that equals how much you should be invested in equities. But that's obviously not par for the course for every single human being. There are lots of people. I was just working with a 35-year-old a couple of weeks ago, and she said, you know, I take the quiz and it says I'm ultra conservative, but I read all these articles and it says I should be really aggressive. What do I do? And so she went out and talked to all of her friends, and her friends were like, well, I don't know. I just put all of it in equities. And I mean, isn't that what you're supposed to do? And so she came to me and said, like, is it okay that this is not what I'm comfortable doing? And I said, absolutely. So I think taking that step back and taking one of these free risk tolerance quizzes is a really good idea, so that you know for yourself how risky you want to be before you start to set your asset allocation model. And then I think, you know, once that asset allocation model is set, even this article recommended, I say this as well, if you're somewhere between 7 to 10% off from your asset allocation model that you set, go ahead and make some of those adjustments. But most people, I would say specifically if you're in your wealth building years, probably don't need to do that more than once or twice a year.
Like, I think one of the things with me, right, since I just started investing really hardcore in equities in basically the tail end of 2020, I wanted to have that more aggressive portfolio, but I wasn't sure if I could have that tolerance, right? And that's actually one of the reasons that I sort of do check it every day, is because it's more like an immunization where I'm just kind of like hitting myself over and over and over again of like, can I stay the course with what I have decided to do? And if I keep answering yes, then I'm great. If I have to answer no, then yeah, then it's time for me to reassess, right, that asset allocation. So I would love to get to the point that Annette's at, where it's like, I'm just checking once a year, but I still don't feel like I've hit that tolerance of like, yeah, if it hurts, do it more often until it stops hurting kind of vibe.
Annette, I feel like we're in this funny place, because as I read this article, the first thing that comes to mind is you really shouldn't let current events decide your asset allocation, right? And this gets back to what Shauna is saying, is that you should really kind of use some of those risk tolerance tools and try to figure out before you're in the bumpy part of the road. But then I hear what Josh is saying, which is when you're in the bumpy part of the road is when you actually realize if your risk tolerance fits who you are. And so I guess the question becomes, can we learn from these blips in current events in such a way that helps us and doesn't harm us? Because I keep on worrying that if we start making all these decisions based on current events, we're going to be behind the eight ball, right? We're going to be deciding too late and really making decisions just on trends. So I guess the big question still becomes, can it help us to pay attention to these news cycles? Can it get us a better understanding of what a risk tolerance truly is?
My instinct says no, it can't help us, because it just goes back to they are selling us a product. Like, how many times do we get emails when you've bought something and then that company is trying to keep you as a customer? They send you emails, oh, here's a sale. And so it's the same in financial media. They want to keep you as a viewer. So it's hard, but you have to be able to separate what are they trying to sell you versus what is the information in there that you need to receive.
And I appreciate that, because one of the other things that I noticed with this article, right, is like some of the information, like Shauna was saying, right, like a rebalance when it's 7 to 10% off of what your asset allocation is, right? Like, that's really good advice, but it's buried and surrounded by all of the things, to Annette's point, of what they're like selling, which is the eyeballs of like this, there's this dramatic thing that's happening. Should you do something? So, yeah.
Josh, how do you know then who to listen to? I mean, obviously you're going to listen to Earn and Invest and everyone's talking money. But besides that, like, how do you judge then, as you are consuming this information, you're learning, you're building, you're growing, how do you choose who to listen to? Because I think you, especially if you're listening to what I look like as traditional media, you're going to get a really mixed bag of advice.
Yeah. So that is a great question. So, and I wish I was better prepared to answer, but I would say that the first thing, this kind of plays on Annette's point, which is I try to figure out, how do they earn income? How do they make a living, right, at this thing? If it's to get eyeballs and get people to click on ads, then, you know, it kind of goes down a little bit. The other one is, how consistent in the messaging are they of the actual practical things that you can do, as opposed to what's happening right now in the world, right? Where it's just kind of like, and I think Stacking Benjamins, they've joked about it before, where it's like, it sounds like we just keep saying the same stuff, but we're doing it because not everybody's like, this may be the first episode somebody hears. So they're getting it for the first time. So that's sort of how I choose. So a lot of the information that I look at, like Frank Vasquez is a great resource for me. And part of the reason that I trust Frank is he's like, I don't have sponsors. I don't have advertisements. I'm not trying to sell you anything. We have a nonprofit that we support, and here you go, right? Like, that's the closest that you get. And there's no revenue generation from that. So there's a little bit of trust there for me. And he's very consistent in his messaging, right? So,
yeah. And that's Risk Parity Radio. Frank Vasquez does a podcast called Risk Parity Radio, which is excellent. Shauna, let's talk rebalancing, because I think there's this underlying piece to the advice when they go in, when Carrie goes and talks to all these financial experts. You know, it's interesting because there's a lot of talk about rebalancing, but one expert says, well, maybe it's time to think more about tips and cash reserves and safer options. On the other hand, if we're looking at rebalancing, isn't the idea that if the equities market goes down, that's actually the time when that's going to become less a percentage of your portfolio, and you should be going in all in and buying more, not pulling out to safer assets? A big part of this advice seems to be, well, just rebalance. And I'm kind of thinking, well, that's not something you do during shaky periods in the market. That's something you do in all periods during the market. Is rebalancing the ultimate answer to what Carrie Hannon's question is what happens to our retirement investments when the market becomes shaky?
Yeah, Jordan. I mean, I don't think anything is the absolute answer. You know, I really like what Josh was saying and Annette was saying too about, I think this is a gut check kind of conversation that you have with yourself of, do I still feel comfortable with how my assets are allocated. Am I following my strategy regardless of what's going on in the market? I think is a really healthy way to approach this. And reading articles like this, I think just what Josh was saying is we want to separate the facts from the fiction. So we want to go in there and say, okay, so this article is talking about if I'm 7 to 10% off my asset allocation, maybe I should take a look and see, is this something I want to change now? Or what you're pointing to, Jordan, is when we're in these bumpy times, those are the times where most people are inclined to go back and look at their investments when they haven't done so in quite a while. And maybe that might be just be the time to pause a little bit and to think a little bit more proactively through the process of, does it make sense for me to do this right now? Or is it just motivation for me to go in and look and say, okay, so here's how I'm allocated. Let me just take a little bit of time and figure out if I want to make those changes. I think another thing that the article was pointing out, which I would agree on, is that if you are in your accumulation phase and you have many more years to go, you are going to have many more blips like this. That's just a fact. It's going to happen. And you don't need to make changes during these blips. Now, if you're closer to retirement or you're in retirement, the stakes are a little bit higher when these sort of events come up. And that might be, yes, if you're in those years, yeah, you might want to go in and just make sure everything is still the way you want it to be. Maybe sell off some of your gains if you're feeling a little bit nervous. But I really think that this, the whole asset allocation conversation, comes back to a gut check within each of us of what are we ultimately comfortable with? And whatever decision you decide to make in those moments, can you ultimately live with that decision that you make? I think that's maybe a better question to ask.
Yeah, Shauna, I love this conversation about when you get closer to retirement. A priori, we should probably have a more conservative asset allocation than we did during those accumulation years. But if you find yourself closer to retirement and getting more and more anxious as the market is doing these blips, then that is probably a good sign that your asset allocation is not conservative enough, right? And if you're going to sit up at night thinking and worrying about it, then you probably need to be less equities and more bonds or what have you. Josh, talk about rebalancing. Is it something you think a lot about? I hate messing with my investments. So when I was making money, the way I'd rebalance was I would pay attention to what I was putting my new money in, because I hated the idea of buying and selling and switching my asset allocation. So I would just wait to see what happened to the market. And as I got either heavy equities or heavy bonds, I would take all new dollars and then put them in what was lagging. Are you having a real active rebalancing schedule, or are you kind of like, yeah, let it ride, see what happens?
That is another great question. And I think, so the inner philosopher in me wants to define terms. So I think we are all consistently rebalancing, right? Because during accumulation, if you're dollar cost averaging, chances are you're buying the thing that's low in whatever your asset allocation is, right? And even when I was looking at earned revenue and income and things like that, like if the stock market did plummet, I did, you know, what you were talking about, Jordan, where it's like, now my cash is up at this point. Okay, I should buy in at this point, right? And so if we look at rebalance as being an intentional event that happens like once a year, no, I don't rebalance at all and have not as of yet. I just basically keep spending money and doing what I need to do and keep investing as I earn money. I'm taking the John Bogle, never rebalance, just do whatever you need to do to hit your asset allocation.
No, and that's a real reasonable way to do it. And that you said that you try to look at the stock market as little as possible. You don't like looking often. Are those once a year looks for rebalancing, or are you taking more of a stance that Josh has?
I'm more a stance that Josh has, but I don't have anything really to rebalance. I mean, I have two index funds, so there isn't anything to rebalance. But looking into the future, I do question whether bonds are ever in my future, because I see bonds on the similar aspect of having money sit in cash. And to quote Joe from Stacking Benjamins, I'm safely going nowhere with my money. So I question that now. And that's almost where my investment policy statement in my head changes. I'm thinking now, what am I going to do in the future? And I look at articles and podcasts for information on what should I do when I'm approaching retirement. And my head says, have 2 to 3 years worth of cash. But I don't know how to accumulate that cash because right now I'm focusing on putting everything extra into the market. When do I put that money into cash?
Yes. Sorry, I'm all kinds of enthused about this because that's actually why I do the barbell thing, because it does actually give me a second asset that I can get into and rebalance into. So the way I do it is I have my asset allocation is such that it's usually 3 to 6 months, at least for now. And so, but if things are dropping really hard, then all of a sudden it starts creeping up. And if it hits a certain threshold, that's when I take even more extra cash, right? Beyond the dollar cost averaging that I'm already doing, I will actually take cash from my savings and throw it in there just to kind of see. But I'm always maintaining that lower threshold of that 3 to 6 months. So as soon as I actually made cash an intentional part of my portfolio that I classified as my portfolio, the world changed because we all talk about like portfolios as being completely separate from cash for some reason, but then have the recommendation to have like 1 to 2 years or whatever it is. And it's like, why isn't that just part of the portfolio, y'all? Like, let's do that.
We are talking to Shauna Game, Josh Bruce, and Annette Mayer, and we are discussing an article from Yahoo Finance titled, Here's What to Do with Your Retirement Savings When Markets Are Shaky by Carrie Hannon. We're going to take a short break. I'm Doc G, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast. All right, so most of us know the bad news already. If you were using Mint as a budgeting app, it has shut down. But the good news is there's something better, and it's called Monarch Money. I started using Monarch Money myself about 5 months ago, and I knew immediately that I liked it more than any other budgeting app I had ever used. For one, it focuses on collaboration. This is easy to share with your spouse, your partner, your financial advisor. And it's aspirational. Not only can you look at your current budget, but what do you want to buy? What do you want your goals to be? You can focus on those in Monarch Money. It's the next generation of personal finance apps. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Furthermore, you can create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/earn. Again, that's monarchmoney.com/EARN. What I like about this app is it's intuitive, easy to use, quick to sign on. It's collaborative, as we talked about. It's customizable. The idea is you can use this app the way you want to use it. And the reason why is the Monarch Money team is customer focused. They are focusing on you, me, and all the other people who want to use this app to live a better financial life. After trying out Monarch Money for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/earn. That's monarchmoney.com/EARN for your extended 30-day free trial. You know what? I love our meals from Factor. My son started getting them about a year ago when he needed a quick alternative to meals on the go. But where we've really enjoyed them is we've been remodeling our kitchen. That's right, we've had no access to our kitchen for the last few weeks. And some nights, we just had no idea what to do for a meal. That is where Factor came in. We would just pop the meal in the microwave, and 2 minutes later, we'd have a fantastic meal. You can do the exact same thing, and there's tons of variety. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week. These are chef-prepared meals, and let me tell you, they are delicious. No fuss, no mess. You just put it in the microwave and 2 minutes later, you have a meal. This is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Head to factormeals.com/earn50 and use your code EARN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code EARN50 at factormeals.com/earn50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. We are back with Shauna Game, Josh Bruce, and Annette Mayer, and we are discussing today's article, Here's What to Do with Your Retirement Savings When Markets Are Shaky by Carrie Hannon. Shauna, before the break, we were discussing cash reserves, and I'm wondering, these blips or any of these market indications, do you ever feel the strong need to go into more cash reserves? Like, is there an indication to you like, okay, now I think I'm just going to pad the cash a little bit?
I tend to think the opposite train of thought. I tend to think the blips, I'm like, all right, let me purchase some more. And then, you know, maybe when times are a little bit calmer, I'll move a little bit more into cash. So I kind of do the opposite. You know, I really like what Josh was talking about of integrating your cash savings into your investment portfolio. I think that's a really great way to look at things. And you're right, we typically think of our portfolios as just, okay, those are my equities and that's kind of, I'm swinging for the fences. But being able to, you know, balance that out a little bit, again, depending on who you are as a human and what you value, I think could be a really great way of thinking of things. But yeah, when the blips happen, my decision is either to do nothing or to buy more.
Annette, I think talking about some of what you were discussing right before the break about cash reserves and how to go into it and when to go into it, Ken Tuminia was quoted in this article, and he says, the current high interest rates of fixed income investments mean it's a good time to move some of your assets from high risk stocks to low risk fixed income investments. What do you think about this suggestion? I have very strong feelings about the suggestion, if you couldn't tell from what we've discussed so far. But he's kind of somewhat trying to answer one of those questions you had, as things are a little shaky. Why not put some money into some fixed, more liquid investments? Interest rates are a little bit better on them. Why not do it?
I think the timing for that would be based on your age and or how close you are to retirement. When do you need this money? I'm at the point where I don't need this money. And yes, I don't have the answer when I should start building that cash reserve, but I know it's not when I'm 40, when I'm 15 to 20 years away from retirement. So if you are close to that age where cash is maybe a more heavy weighted part of your portfolio, then yes, this would be an excellent time to move some money over to cash.
Shauna, I was on a personal finance Facebook page today, and someone kind of had made the quip. They were like, I've put my money in the total market index for the last 2 years, and because of inflation and because of the ups and downs of the market, I feel like I'm getting nowhere. And I think articles like this one by Carrie Hannon really are pushing us to say, how are we dealing with inflation in our own investor policies and in our own actions when it comes to investing? Do you think what's happening with inflation right now will have long-term effects on how we generally invest?
I tend to think so. Although I would say, I think the average investor probably is not thinking about inflation. There are, of course, a lot of articles. We talk about it on podcasts until we're blue in the face. But I think a lot of what we're talking about here, most investors aren't thinking about these things. They're not thinking about asset allocation. They're not thinking about rebalancing. They're not thinking about inflation or is the Fed going to cut rates or not cut rates. I think because this goes back to, even though this is a money podcast, generally speaking, we don't talk about money. It is still, even investing is still a somewhat taboo conversation. We obviously can talk about our gains very easily amongst people, but we're not going to talk about the dips in our portfolios. It's just not conversations that we normally have with people. So I feel like just everyday people are not thinking about these things and, you know, are not taking them into consideration when they're looking at their portfolios, to be honest.
Josh, you are not an everyday person. You are an earn and invest listener, which puts you in a little bit of a vaunted position. Is inflation or worries about inflation changing the way you're looking at investing in the future?
No, I mean, that's pretty much the short answer. I typically don't pay too much attention to it. Depends on how am I actually feeling. Now, when it becomes like radical, you know, like if we're talking swings of 5 or 10% one way or the other, then it's like, oh, that's interesting, right? But as far as from day to day, no. The question is always, what is my burn rate? What do I have in reserve? And how long will that sustain me, right? And those are my three questions. And so it impacts me a little bit, but as long as I'm maintaining my personal inflation rate at a really low level or at zero, then we're pretty much okay until it actually hits that point. Now, I have empathy for people where it does impact them more, right? Like if you're really big into eggs, like in last year or whenever it happened, right? That was a problem. But for me, it wasn't.
Annette, there's a guy named Brian Feraldi who wrote a wonderful book called Why the Stock Market Goes Up or something to that extent. I always get the name exactly wrong, but Why the Stock Market Goes Up. And one of the things he said that's the driver of the market going up is actually inflation. Inflation actually pushes equity prices up. So, I mean, aren't we okay when it comes to inflation as long as we put a lot of money into equities?
I think we are. And I actually do pay attention to inflation when it comes to investing. And I didn't realize until this conversation, but my husband and I, we did look at increasing the amount we invest this past year, a few months ago. And now I'm realizing that driver of that conversation was the inflation. We didn't expect inflation to be in the double digits. So that does influence us, because if that's possible now, it's possible to happen again. And when we want to live off of this money in our third trimester of life, as they say, I want that money to have beat inflation so I can help offset that inflation by adjusting my lifestyle today, lowering my everyday life just a little bit to increase the amount I can put in to let that grow to beat the inflation in the future.
Shauna, I almost feel like the conclusion we're coming to is, at least those of us who are kind of in this financial independence, personal finance realm, we kind of want to do the opposite of what this article suggests. Like a lot of us are like, no, this is time to double down. We want to beat inflation. Maybe equities are going down and we should buy them. Is that strange? I mean, I feel like what we're really coming to the conclusion is we should do the exact opposite of what this article kind of says.
I think it's good advice. And I love that you have this community, Jordan, of people that are so passionate talking about investing in this way and really sharing their experiences, because I feel like places like this show that people can come to and listen to and hear sort of the sounding board and hear lots of different opinions and lots of different really applicable tips around investing. I think it broadens your perspective. It helps you maybe see your own investing journey through a little different lens. And so when you come across articles like this, you can come at them with a different way of reading these types of articles, where you aren't sucked into the sort of fear and dread and gloom, and you can see it for what it is, pull apart those pieces that are gems in the article, and kind of move on with your own investing journey. So I don't think it's bad advice. I think, again, we keep talking about, you know, all of us have shared different perspectives. It comes back to really knowing yourself, knowing what you're comfortable with, and moving forward from that knowledgeable position.
I will give the disclaimer that, first and foremost, all of us sitting talking here on this podcast have some margin in our lives, right? So we're not living hand to mouth, any of us. And none of us are sitting right at that retirement age, that traditional retirement age. So none of us are 65 or 70 and really looking at down the barrel of decumulation, which I think changes things. So I think it's important to keep these disclaimers obvious and here. We are a set group of people speaking from a set viewpoint. Even people who listen to this podcast, right, Earn and Invest, tend to be people who are either on the journey to financial independence or already there. We tend to be somewhat high income earners. We tend to be well educated. So again, this advice, I think, works in the group of people we're talking about. But that doesn't mean that if you are not in your 60s, in your 70s, if you don't have much margin, if you're worried about whether the money will be there or not, for you, being more conservatively invested, having more bonds and cash equivalents might make sense. So I just want to make sure everyone listening to this knows that we come from a very specific viewpoint. Josh, bring us home. What are your biggest fears about the future in investing, or do you have fears?
So one of my favorite lines, it's the only redeeming quality of the movie After Earth, in my opinion, is danger is real, fear is a choice. And so to kind of piggyback and not discount what you just said, Jordan, because it was very eloquently put, you know, I have been homeless and I currently do not earn an income, right? So even though I had margin in the past to do what I've managed to do, I am sort of living a mild decumulation phase. So, you know, going back to the immunization thing, like I'm taking it for a test drive and seeing what happens. So, but yeah, with regard to fear, I think it's always there. There's always the danger that inflation is going to kick our butts. There's always the danger that the stock market's going to drop. The opposite is also true, right? Like going back to Shauna's earlier point, we don't know what the future is going to hold, right? Like, but we're always speculating on what we believe the future is going to hold. And so for me, I tend to be a little bit more optimistic in that regard. Like, I think it's going to work out because I've been through enough situations where I'm like, oh, this is the end, right? Only to find out, no, I actually survived that.
Annette, let's talk about financial advisors. I mean, we've been really talking about the emotions behind investing and how this current news cycle affects our emotions and maybe will affect our asset allocation. I think, again, the group of people here feels comfortable with this idea that the market could go down and it's not going to scare them into selling everything at an inopportune time. But for the rest of that population out there, people you know, people you interact with, are financial advisors the answer? I mean, is that what we could do if we're not sure if we have the strength to kind of follow our investor policy?
I think financial advisors are the answer for some people, as long as they are a financial advisor and not someone who is selling them a product. I think that's what people go into looking for a financial advisor for, and they come up with whoever is in front of them. And oftentimes it is a salesperson. And I took the approach when I got into personal finance podcasts, I was looking for education to understand how to invest and to determine if I do need a financial advisor. That was on the back of my mind because you do hear that financial advisor. I would think in the name, they would advise me what to do. And I learned in personal finance podcasts that they may not teach me that way. So I said, okay, I need to find what do I need to do? And I learned that reading articles are news and they are clickbaity. And I found the consistency of podcasts to not be selling me things. And I also learned that podcasters, that is not their only stream of income. So I trusted them more and I saw consistencies. And then that gave me the confidence to invest. And a few years later, once those up and down shifts of the market don't put me at zero or below, I've gained enough equity in there that they don't hurt quite as much. I gained confidence and then I was able to trust myself to then grow my portfolio. And now a down phase does not affect me whatsoever.
Well, Shauna, Josh, and Annette, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today. What I really glean from our conversation and from this article is when the market is doing crazy things, there's a really bad time to decide on asset allocation. That is something we should really be doing way before, whether in our investor policy is written or it's in our head. We should be really thinking about risk tolerance and those type of things before we get ourselves into a situation that feels uncomfortable. However, I also think that when the market is doing crazy things, it's a great time to road test that risk assessment and see whether you were right or wrong. If you are not sleeping at night, then it probably means that you are a little overly aggressive and need to reassess your risk adjustment, reassess your asset allocation, and make things more comfortable so that when these blips happen, you don't end up making decisions that you later regret. I want to end the show the way I end every show by asking specifically our expert, Shauna, what is happening with Everyone's Talking Money and how can people reach out to you if they want to learn more?
We have some awesome things happen at Everyone's Talking Money. If anyone listens to my show, they know I love to talk about the mental side of money as much as I do the practical side of money. So you can listen to the podcast everywhere on every different platform. It's Everyone's Talking Money. I'd love to have you over.
Shauna Game, Josh Bruce, and Annette Mayer, thank you so much for being on Earn and Invest today.
Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
That's a wrap. Earn and Invest is now part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to this show as well as other fine podcasts. I have to say, I really have a blast recording these episodes with community members. So I really want to thank Josh and Annette, as well as Shauna Game. This was a blast, and I really look for articles that can help us decipher what we're hearing in the news and how that should be affecting our decision-making. This was a perfect example because this article really pushes us to, A, not only look at media in general and try to decide if it's something we should be paying attention to, but also look at our own sense of our comfort with our asset allocation. So, look, I think what we get out of this conversation is news should not affect our investments. If you are waiting for the news cycle to tell you what to do with buying and selling, you're doing it wrong. And the reason why is the news cycle changes quickly. Often the people commenting in the news cycle don't necessarily have your best interests at hand. They're trying to sell you something, whether that be advertising or getting you to click on their article. It's very clickbaity. The point is, you have to decide what's good for you, and it's really hard to do that, to decide what's best for your investments when you're caught up in this emotional cycle of the news, which is often gloom and doom. And so we talk about having an investor policy statement, this idea that before we start investing, we should write out a plan for what we want to do with our investments. What should be our asset allocation? What type of investments do we want? How do we know when to buy? How do we know when to sell? And figure this out all way before we find ourselves in a situation where we're worried about what's going to happen to the market or what's happening in the world in general, because we tend to make really bad decisions when the roller coaster ride goes up and down. This is not a good time to mess with our portfolio. But as we talked about in this episode, that doesn't mean that paying attention to the news is completely useless. Once you set your asset allocation, once you decide how much risk you want, what I'm talking about is if we're just talking about paper assets, what percentage of stocks to bonds you want, what percentage of mutual funds to bond funds you want. The news cycle is going to help you take your own temperature and see how you feel about it. If you are listening to the news and you're getting freaked out and you have this big urge to change your asset allocation to buy or sell, then this is a pretty good message that maybe your investor policy statement has it wrong. Maybe you've put your money into riskier assets than you thought you were, and it was only during this roller coaster ride did you recognize how deeply uncomfortable you are with how your money is invested. Listen, none of us should stay up nights worrying about what's happening in the market. Let me repeat that. None of us should stay up nights worrying about what's happening in the market. If you're doing that, you are probably not invested correctly. And so it's not completely useless. I like to know what's going to happen with inflation, all of that interests me, but
I only pay attention to it so much as to look and see, this is a stress test. How comfortable am I with my asset allocation? How comfortable am I with my investor policy statement? And again, I freely admit I am one of those people who probably should write it down, but I don't. I keep it in my mind. I know exactly what my priorities are, but it is always better to write it down. And therefore, in times of difficulty, you can go back and reread that investor policy statement and talk yourself out of doing something that you don't really want to do. And so I'm going to keep paying attention to media. I'm going to keep paying attention to news. I'm going to keep doing these community episodes where we talk about this stuff, but I'm always going to take it with a grain of salt. You have to look at the news for what it is. It's a little bit of a hyped up version of what truly is happening in the world. And so we need to pay attention. I think a lot of us want to know what's happening, but a lot of the spin doesn't always make sense. And I think it behooves us to ignore that spin. Thank you again for listening to this episode. Again, some of these community episodes are my favorite. On another note, I am still doing the Path to Purpose coaching. That is where I help you one-on-one learn about enough career, make career decisions, and try to figure out what purpose looks like in your life, as well as we have the Wealth with Purpose Mastermind. Maybe you don't want to do just one-on-one coaching, but you want to be part of a group of people who are accountable, trying to figure out how to transition their lives from worrying about making money to then transitioning your life to thinking about what are you going to do with that money to live a life of purpose and happiness. The easiest way to access both of these things is to go to earnandinvest.com. For coaching, it's earnandinvest.com/coaching. For the mastermind, it's earnandinvest.com/mastermind. I love to see you in either of those places, and we'll talk again next episode. All right, I leave things running just for a moment or two to catch whatever we talk about after the show. Josh and Annette, I really wanted to thank you guys for coming on. I am always so excited and surprised about how well these episodes go. And so I knew neither of you, right? Neither of you I knew anything about coming onto the show. You are literally two people. I guess the only way you've self-selected is you were willing to email me and say you wanted to be on the show. But I love these conversations. And I think, again, Sean and I could talk ad nauseum about how we feel about this. But what's just as important, if not more important, is how people out there listening to this feel about it. And so I really thank you guys so much for coming on the show. This, to me, these episodes are just a blast.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, I love hearing people from the community on the episodes because you hear people's stories and you learn that everyone really is different and everyone actually isn't the high earner that Jordan you think we might be, because Josh was homeless at one point and I'm living on a modest income and I actually don't work. I'm in a mini retirement myself, take it time to raise my son, and we live off of my husband's income. But by listening to these podcasts, I've learned how to manage my money so I can achieve that. And that's really what I get out of it. They're my accountability buddies.
And I think that's where, to piggyback on that, Jordan, thank you so much for putting this together, because this is a great community. Annette, it was a pleasure. Sean, it was also a pleasure. And I think on that score, there's also... The what you said, Jordan, was the perfect phrasing, which is we have margin. So even though I don't have a steady stream of income, like I can't forecast my revenue 5 years from now or even guess at it, right? I have margin from the perspective that my annual cost isn't going to burn through everything that I've accumulated, right? So I still do have margin and I still receive a paycheck. The only difference is I'm paying me instead of other people, right? So.
Yeah. And I think what I also love about these episodes, and I think Shauna, you'll feel this too, is we are desperately as content producers trying to be the ones that create the content that's worth listening to. And so whenever I look at articles like this, I'm always asking myself the question, is this helpful? Does this move the needle for people? Is this article going to give them healthy financial
you know, habits, because if it's not, then that's not what I want to be as a podcast, right? And so trying to figure out how we create the content that isn't just clickbaity, but actually solves a problem, answers a question, or moves people forward.
Yeah, I would wholeheartedly agree. And I think that's what's fun about taking an article like this, because at the end of the day, the four of us, experts, non-experts, it doesn't matter. We're all humans and we're all trying to figure out this crazy thing called money. And it's tricky and irrational and intricate and all sorts of things. So I think it's fun to talk about things from this perspective, having four different people share, I think is such a great resource for your community as well.
Anything we didn't talk about from any of you guys, anything like about that article, you're like, oh, I really wish we brought up this point.
I don't have anything.
No, I think the closest I was going to have was the 7-10% recommendation, and we covered that. So
yeah.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Tech moves fast, so keep pace with the Daily Crunch podcast from TechCrunch. With new episodes every day, this podcast will give you a quick overview on everything you need and should know about startups, new tech, regulations, and more. Listen to TechCrunch Daily Crunch now, wherever you get your podcasts. That's TechCrunch Daily Crunch, wherever you get your podcasts.